Your tire was slashed. Looks like someone has it in for you.
Chapter 7. Haley drove to the body shop in a daze, Lance's words echoing around inside her head. Looks like someone has it in for you. Fear prickled through her. What if he was right? What if the slashed tire was connected to the damage to her car door? If that was the case, it must have happened in the parking structure at Huntington and Dodd. Surely it couldn't have been someone who worked there, could it? It certainly wasn't Lance. He wouldn't have told her the tire had been slashed if he'd done it. Haley frowned. No one knew she was driving a rental. No one other than Natalie. This had to be the work of hoodlums taking advantage of the fact that cars were being left unattended in the underground parking lot. After all, they'd got away with it the first time. She made a mental note to ask around in the office tomorrow to see if anyone else's vehicle had been tampered with. Maybe she should ask the property manager if she could review the security camera footage, on the off chance the lowlife who'd slashed her tire had neglected to cover his or her face. Reality television had taught her that not all criminals were masterminds. Still mulling over what had happened, she pulled up to the body shop gate, a spiked wall of iron shrouded in shadows. Despite wanting to believe that what had happened to her car was random vandalism, her instincts told her otherwise. Someone was preying on her. It explained the queasy feeling that came over her at times, as though a stranger's eyes were fastened on her, following her every movement. And then a harrowing thought struck. What if someone had followed her here to the body shop tonight? Her wide-eyed gaze locked in the rearview mirror, but no headlights shone back at her, announcing the unwelcome presence of a stranger. Her heart pounded beneath her ribs. She shouldn't have come here alone this late at night. It had been a foolhardy decision. Suddenly spooked at the idea of being alone in the isolated parking lot, she frantically punched in the number the estimator had given her and waited for the gate to trundle open along its rails. She pulled in and drove along the line of cars until she spotted her forerunner. With a final sweeping glance around the deserted parking lot, she parked the rental and climbed into her own car. Once she was safely back on a familiar road and her heartbeat had slowed to a more natural pace, she called the rental company and left a message explaining what had happened. When she hung up, she dialed her parents' number. She was in sore need of a reassuring voice. It was almost midnight Florida time, but her parents were both night owls, often watching movies until the early hours. Her mother answered the phone on the second ring. "Hey, honey." "Hi, Mom." A wave of calm instantly washed over her at the familiar sound of her mother's voice. "I'm going to put you on speaker so your father can listen in," her mother said. "How's the new house working out? Everything good?" "Yes, I love it. I can't thank you enough for helping me out with the down payment."
"What about your new job?"
her father chimed in. "It's going great so far. Busy, but I'm learning a ton."
"I bet you are,"
her father responded.
"Has that overbearing boss of yours settled down any? Not driving you up the wall, I hope."
"Nick's demanding, but he's one of the top defense attorneys in the district. I'm lucky to be working for him."
"How about your other colleagues?"
her mother asked.
"Have you made any friends there yet?"
"Yeah, they're a good bunch. There's another girl around my age, Natalie. We get on great. And I met a guy. We've only gone on one date so far, but I really like him. We'll see how it goes."
"Well, you certainly are leading a charmed life, aren't you?"
her mother said with a pleased chuckle.
"I'm so happy for you, darling. You deserve it after all your hard work."
Charmed might be a stretch. Haley gripped the steering wheel tightly, debating whether or not to tell her parents what was going on. Part of her wanted their reassurance that everything was going to be all right, but another part of her wanted to protect them from worrying needlessly about her.
"Something on your mind, sweetie?"
her mother ventured. Haley gave a wry smile. Nothing slipped past her intuitive on-steroids mother. "Nothing major. I had a bit of bad luck with my car this past week."
"Your car?"
her father echoed.
"Is it not running properly? You are changing the oil regularly, aren't you, Hales?"
She rolled her eyes. "It's not a maintenance issue, Dad. It was vandalism."
"Vandalism?"
her mother exclaimed.
"Are you okay, dear? Did they break your window or something?"
"I'm fine. I wasn't in the car when it happened. I left it in the parking garage overnight, and someone scratched the word run into the passenger door," Haley explained. "And then tonight, someone slashed my right rear tire and left me stranded. Luckily, the janitor was there, and he changed the tire for me. She chewed on her lip, biting back the desire to mention that she found him creepy and had half suspected he might be behind it.
"Are you working in a dangerous area or something?"
her mother asked, her voice rising an octave. "That's just it. It's not a bad area at all," Haley replied. "Quite the opposite, in fact. Whoever slashed my tire was probably captured on the security cameras. I doubt I'll be able to ID anyone from the footage, but I'm going to talk to the property manager tomorrow and see what he says."
"You need to get down to the police station and make a report first thing in the morning,"
her father urged.
"This should be on file in case it continues."
"Yeah, I suppose," Haley said dubiously. "I don't want to kick up too much of a fuss at my new job in case it was just teenagers. If something else happens, I'll definitely file a report."
"I hope it's not someone from your new company," her mother said.
Haley frowned, contemplating the idea. Other than Lance, she hadn't seriously considered the possibility that someone else from the office had damaged her car. But Natalie had let slip that quite a few people had applied for her position. Had Natalie been one of them? Haley could feel her paranoia weaving its way back into her thoughts. Natalie had sounded somewhat disgruntled when she'd mentioned Nick taking Haley out to expensive restaurants. "More than my boss ever does." Was she secretly harboring resentment? Haley shook the thought free, hating that her paranoia was getting the best of her. Even if Natalie had applied for the job working for Nick, she'd made a point of befriending Haley. She wouldn't have done that if she was jealous of her. Unless she was schizophrenic, it made no sense. Haley didn't know the rest of the staff very well yet. Nick was a bit of a dark horse, and it had struck her as odd that her new boss had made it his business to find out so much about her private life, but he didn't have any reason to wage a campaign of terror against her.
"I mean, it sounds like it only happens in the company parking garage," her mother continued.
"That's true, but the garage is accessible to anyone," Haley explained. "It's an underground parking structure for all the office buildings in the tower."
"Don't they have a security guard on duty?"
her father asked. "No, only the cameras."
"Well, the good news is it doesn't sound like some delusional romantic stalker, which would be a much more dangerous situation,"
her father observed.
"My guess is it's probably some teenage punks. Even so, it would be best if you didn't stay late at the office on your own anymore."
"You're right," Haley agreed. "I'm going to try and avoid that for the next couple of weeks, at least until this blows over."
"I just don't understand why people do things like that, hurting others for no good reason,"
her mother said. Haley's gut tightened. It was a haunting question. She hadn't had any good reason to hurt Emma Murray, which made her actions all the more abhorrent. Her parents had no idea that she was the one responsible for what had happened. No one knew, other than her quad sisters, and they were equally culpable. They had egged her on. Haley grimaced. Maybe she deserved everything bad that was happening to her. She was reaping what she'd sown.
Chapter 8.
Over the next few weeks, Haley didn't experience any more unsettling hang-ups at work, but she still had the feeling someone was following her at times. She'd been tempted to tell Jake about it now that they were dating regularly, but she was afraid he would think she was being ridiculous. Thankfully, nothing more had happened to her car since the tire-slashing incident. She'd asked the building manager to review the footage, but coincidentally, it turned out the cameras were malfunctioning at the time. They had since been repaired, but it did little to give Haley any peace of mind. She made a point of not being the last one to leave the office anymore. On the plus side, she'd been arriving home earlier in the evenings, so she'd finally been able to connect with her new neighbors, and apart from Edith Moore and her equally reclusive brother Harold, they were a friendly enough bunch. At least she'd thought so until the morning she'd discovered an envelope containing a note card tucked under her windshield wiper. She'd thrown a harried glance around the cul-de-sac, but no one else was out and about. Hopefully, she hadn't inadvertently parked in a spot one of her neighbors had laid claim to. Edith and Harold seemed like the type to write her a nasty warning rather than have a friendly word with her about it. With a sense of foreboding, she tore open the envelope and scanned the note card inside. Blood drained from her head. She swayed forward, clutching the side of her car for support. The word "die" was scrawled on the card in red Gothic letters. Splotches of ink splattered like blood all over. With a muffled shriek, she dropped the card at her feet, her eyes darting around the cul-de-sac to see if anyone was watching from behind a curtain. Her chest heaved up and down for several minutes as she fought to steady her breathing, When she'd regained some measure of composure, she retrieved the card and retreated inside her house, where she tore the note and envelope up and tossed the pieces in the trash can. In retrospect, she should have taken it to the police. It was the confirmation she needed that what was happening to her was far from random. Someone was harassing her, and it was clear they knew both where she worked and lived. Now her misgivings extended to her neighbors, none of whom she knew well enough to rule out as suspects. The new house she'd looked forward to coming home to each evening suddenly seemed less hospitable. Sleep had eluded her lately, and the sleep deprivation wasn't helping her state of mind. She wasn't functioning well at work with a sluggish brain, and she'd given up volunteering entirely in the meantime. Her current stressed-out state wasn't beneficial to the kids who deserved better. A few days after she found the note on her windscreen, she broke down and told Jake everything. He'd been nothing but supportive ever since, checking up on her regularly and making sure she made it to work safely each morning. It was terrifying to think that whoever was stalking her knew where she lived and worked. Everyone in her cul-de-sac, as well as at Huntington and Dodd, had become a suspect in her mind. Haley considered each of her neighbors in turn, but they had no apparent motive that she was aware of. She racked her brains for other possibilities, but there was no angry ex-boyfriend lurking in the wings. Her previous relationship had ended on amicable terms. She had no enemies that she knew of, which left only the possibility of a stranger, as dark and disturbing as that sounded. When Jake proposed 4 months later, Haley stood there speechless, staring down in awe at the 2-carat ring in a black velvet box. They'd hiked to the top of Multnomah Falls one chilly Sunday morning, and while Haley was admiring the view, Jake got down on one knee in front of her.
"Haley Burroughs, will you do me the honor of becoming my wife?"
She clapped a hand to her lips. "Jake, are you serious? It's too soon," she protested, her heart booming in her chest, partly from the steep hike they'd just undertaken, partly from the thrill of what was unfolding before her eyes.
"You know I love you, Hales,"
Jake said, his voice thick with emotion.
"You're the one I want to spend the rest of my life with. I want to be with you every day, to love you and protect you. You won't ever have to be scared again of stalkers or spiders or anything else that comes your way."
Haley blinked back tears. For too many years, she'd been wary of getting close to anyone, but her friendship with Natalie had helped break down those barriers. In the end, it hadn't taken Jake long to sweep away any lingering reservations, and when she said yes, with only the tiniest flicker of hesitation, he quickly slipped the glittering ring on her finger and wrapped her tightly in his arms.
"I promise you I'll never let anything happen to you,"
he whispered in her ear. Her heart skipped a beat at the fervor in his voice. In all honesty, it was a bit of a whirlwind romance, but Jake was kind, fun, ambitious, and attractive. Everything Haley wanted in a man. And now that she had her house and a good job, maybe it was time to leave behind her fears and insecurities and take a chance on love. There was also the fact that Jake made her feel safe, and the truth was that she'd become increasingly nervous living on her own of late. Natalie was thrilled for her, ogling over her engagement ring and singing Jake's praises, but her parents were more dubious when she called them to give them the news. They urged her to take her time before rushing into anything. But, Haley reasoned, they hadn't met Jake yet, so it was only natural they would err on the side of caution. When Jake told her he was shopping for a wedding present for her, Haley shocked him with her response. "Don't bother. I already know what I want. A security system installed on the house."
"That's not very romantic,"
Jake rumpled his forehead.
"I was going to surprise you with some jewelry."
"Save it for our first anniversary. I want to feel secure in my own house. I don't want to have to worry anymore when I lie awake in bed at night." Jake slid an arm around her.
"You don't have anything to be concerned about. Nothing's happened in ages other than that silly note on your windshield months ago. Probably neighborhood kids running around leaving notes on cars for a laugh."
Haley frowned. "I'm not sure that's all there is to it. Even though nothing's happened in a while, I still feel like someone's following me at times. Maybe I'm just being paranoid, but I want to feel safe in my own home, at least." Jake tucked a strand of hair behind her ear.
"And so you should. If you want a security system, I'll buy you one. But I'm still going to surprise you with something special on our wedding day."
Haley snuggled up to his firm chest and closed her eyes. It was a horrible feeling to think a stranger was watching her, intruding on her world at will. A primal violation of sorts. She was only half convinced that things would be better once Jake moved in. What could he really do to stop a stalker? After talking through their options, and ruling out a small ceremony in a registrar's office with Haley's parents as their witnesses, they opted to elope. Haley knew if she involved her parents, they'd only try and persuade her to have a big wedding with all the bells and whistles, and she'd no desire for a lavish affair that would require seeing faces from her past she would sooner forget. Besides, Jake had no family to invite anyway. Her parents might be miffed at first, but ultimately they'd come round to the idea. 2 months later, Haley and Jake tied the knot on board a private yacht off the coast of San Francisco. After the ceremony, Jake gave her a gold locket engraved with their wedding date and the word forever. Haley clutched it tightly in her hand, drawing strength from the promise it held. With Jake by her side, she'd no longer have to face whatever came her way alone. Maybe now, the creep who'd been messing with her would finally leave her in peace for good. Despite Haley's parents' disappointment that their only daughter had dispensed with a white wedding, Jake managed to charm them when they talked on the phone after the ocean ceremony. Natalie was somewhat peeved at being excluded from the surprise wedding at first, but when Haley explained that she was trying to be sensitive to the fact that Jake had no family to invite, and that a wedding would only have rubbed salt in the wound, she relented and quizzed Haley for all the details, sobbing when she read the personalized vows they'd exchanged. After their wedding, they'd spent 3 days and nights in San Francisco, opting to plan a proper honeymoon later when Haley could get the time off work. "I almost don't want to go back," she said to Jake as they buckled in for their return flight home. "This is the first time I've felt unafraid in months. I'm scared of what might happen when we go home."
"Nothing's going to happen to you now that we're together,"
he promised, kissing her softly.
"I'll make sure of it."
But something did happen toward the end of her first week back at work. Nothing to do with the stalker, and nothing Jake could have prevented from happening. Nick buzzed her on her desk phone.
"I need to see you in my office right away."
Haley got to her feet, mentally running through the possible reasons her boss might want to speak to her urgently. There had been a note of admonition in his voice, but she couldn't figure out what she'd neglected to do, or perhaps not done to his satisfaction. She stepped into his office a moment later and closed the door behind her, taking a seat opposite him. He leaned back and pressed his lips together before addressing her.
"I'm not sure what you think you're playing at, but I don't appreciate the sentiment."
Haley drew her brows together and stared at him blankly. "I don't understand. What are you talking about?" Nick let out an exasperated sigh.
"Don't make this any worse than it already is. I'm a happily married man. We have a working relationship, nothing more. If I take you to lunch, it's strictly business."
"You've lost me." Haley gave a nervous laugh. "I have no idea what this is about." Nick narrowed his eyes.
"It's one thing to proposition me. It's another thing to deny it."
"Proposition you? You must be mistaken," Haley protested. "I've never done anything of the sort."
"Then what do you call this email?"
Nick retorted, sliding a sheet of paper across the table to her and jabbing at it with his finger. Perplexed, Haley picked it up and began to read. "Hi, Nick. These past few months have been everything I hoped they would be, and I've especially enjoyed getting to know you. I love the romantic restaurants you choose for our intimate lunches. You've probably realized by now that I've developed feelings for you. I can tell by the way you look at me that you desire me, too. It's nothing to be ashamed of. People meet and fall in love at work all the time. I just want you to know that whenever you're ready, I'll be waiting. You won't be disappointed. Truly yours, Haley. XOXO." She looked up, her chest seizing, the atmosphere in the room suddenly stifling as her face flushed. "I didn't write this, Nick. You have to believe me. I don't know where this came from, but it certainly didn't come from me." Nick shook his head in disbelief.
"It came from your email account? Are you trying to tell me one of your colleagues sent it as a joke? This is a law firm of professionals."
Haley opened and shut her mouth a couple of times before setting the paper back down on the desk. "I don't know who was behind it, but all I can tell you is that I would never write something like this. You're not the only one who's happily married. I just got back from my honeymoon, in case you've forgotten. And why would I sabotage a job I love?" Nick studied her with a contemplative air for a moment before exhaling loudly and reaching for the paper. He swiftly scrunched it up and tossed it in the trash can.
All right. I'm willing to let it go this once. I'll put it down to some kind of low-life office prank. We'll leave it at that, so don't discuss it any further. I don't want everyone getting wind of it. In the meantime, you might want to think about changing the password on your computer.
Haley nodded as she got to her feet. Of course. Her legs felt like jelly as she exited Nick's office. She kept her gaze down as she made her way back to her desk, not wanting to catch anyone's eye, not wanting anyone to read the shock on her face. Who could have done this? It was obviously some kind of practical joke, but it was in very poor taste. She desperately wanted to run it by Natalie so she could pick her brain. Natalie had worked here a lot longer than she had, and she knew the scoop on everyone. But Nick had made it clear he didn't want her discussing the unsavory email with anyone, and she'd given him her word. Unsettled, she found herself casting furtive glances at everyone as they went by, weighing the possibility that one of her colleagues was behind the email. Was it connected to the other things that had happened to her? If that was the case, someone at Huntington and Dodd was definitely involved. When 5 o'clock finally rolled around, she packed up her bag, grateful to be leaving the oppressive atmosphere of the office behind.
How'd your day go, sweetheart?
Jake asked when she arrived home. It sucked, to be honest with you, she answered, pulling out a bar stool at the kitchen counter where he was uncorking a bottle of red wine.
Why? What happened?
He poured her a glass and handed it to her. I'm not really supposed to talk about it. Nick asked me not to. Jake raised his brows.
I'm your husband. It's not like I'm going to tell anyone. I'm sure Nick meant not to talk about it at the office.
Haley sipped her wine. Okay, but you'd better not breathe a word about it. If it gets back to the office, I'll be fired on the spot. She hesitated, her stomach roiling. Someone sent Nick an email from my account, all about my feelings for him and asking him if he felt the same way, basically propositioning him to start an affair. Jake looked momentarily stunned. He set down his wine glass and ran his fingers through his hair.
Who would do something like that? It sounds petty for a bunch of lawyers and paralegals. More like a high school prank.
That's just it. I can't imagine anyone at the office doing something so stupid. But it must have been someone at work. No one else had access to my computer. Maybe it was someone who wanted my job. Natalie told me Nick interviewed several internal applicants. Jake thought for a minute.
I might be able to find out who it was if I could get on your computer.
Haley set down her glass, her shoulders slumping. Nick was adamant he didn't want me telling anyone about it. He's not going to let a stranger walk into the office and access my work computer.
I could go in after hours,
Jake offered. That's against company policy. You're not an employee, Haley said. And you'd be on camera, so I'd risk losing my job. Isn't there some way you can access my computer remotely? Jake rubbed his chin.
I'm not that computer savvy, and I imagine Huntington and Dodd doesn't skimp on their security protocol.
Haley swatted her hand through the air. I just want to forget about it. I'm going to do as Nick says and write it off as a stupid practical joke. If it happens again, we'll talk about how I can find out who's trying to sabotage my career. Jake leaned over and kissed her forehead.
Sounds like a plan. I'll drink to that.
Haley got to her feet. I'm starving. How about I make us a vegetable stir-fry?
Perfect. I'll set the table.
Haley slid out the drawer containing her pots and pans and rummaged through them looking for her wok. Did you empty the dishwasher this morning? She called over her shoulder.
Yep. I'm way ahead of you.
Jake responded with an elaborate wink. That's odd, Haley said, opening and shutting the other cabinets in the kitchen. I can't find my wok anywhere. Jake walked over and dug through the pots and pans.
That is strange. I know I put it in here.
Haley pulled out a large frying pan. It must be around here somewhere. I'll use this for now. The stir-fry wasn't cooked to her satisfaction without her wok, but Jake praised her efforts.
Tastes good to me, sautéed in that truffle oil.
He cleaned his plate, but Haley pushed hers aside after a few bites, unable to shake a foreboding feeling. It was one of those weird days when nothing seemed to be going quite right, all her fears threatening to resurface. Was it possible the email was connected to the hang-ups and the vandalism, or was she reading too much into it?
Want to watch a movie tonight?
Jake asked.
We could find something on Netflix.
Haley shrugged. Sure, so long as it's a comedy. I need a good laugh after the day I've had.
I'm going to hit the shower first,
Jake said. Go ahead, I'll clean up in here. She scraped the plates into the garbage disposal and turned it on, listening to the familiar sound of the blades spinning and the water draining. After loading the dishes in the dishwasher, she pulled out the trash bag and tied a knot in it before carrying it outside. She was just about to toss the bag into the outdoor garbage can when something caught her eye. Her brain flooded with confusion. What was her walk doing in the trash?
Chapter 9.
Haley puzzled over the walk in the garbage can for several days. Jake adamantly denied throwing it out, and they ended up getting into a heated argument about it after he dared to suggest she might have accidentally tossed it out with the trash. All her fears had reignited with a vengeance, her paranoia mushrooming overnight. For the first time, she wondered if it was possible that she was losing her mind, if the stress of her high-powered job and Nick's never-ending demands was finally getting to her. Could she have thrown out the walk? Either way, she definitely hadn't sent that email to Nick. Her cheeks burned at the thought. Granted, he was a good-looking man, but she was happily married to Jake. She wasn't spending her days fantasizing about having an affair with her boss. On the surface, the discarded walk appeared like a harmless enough incident, but it really bothered her. It opened up the possibility that someone had been in their house. One of their neighbors, perhaps? Her thoughts drifted back to the note she'd found on her windscreen. Someone always seemed to know when she was coming and going. And the hang-ups at her first job had begun around the time she'd moved in here. Was there a weirdo living in her cul-de-sac? Following her? Edith next door was odd, but she was hardly the type to go around breaking into other people's houses and leaving threatening messages. Haley had yet to meet Harold, but by all appearances, he was even more of a recluse than his sister. She'd engaged in small talk with her other neighbors, but she still hadn't invited them over for drinks. Fear of her unknown stalker had made her disinclined to host them in her home as a single woman. Perhaps now that she was married, it would be a good time for her and Jake to host a small gathering and get to know their neighbors better. She needed to gain their trust, see if any of them struck her as odd or suspicious. Maybe some of them had experienced unusual things happening to them or to their vehicles. It was time to do some digging and find out if the person trying to scare her out of her wits resided in her cul-de-sac. At first, Jake was reluctant to jump on board with the idea of hosting a get-together. He was still convinced she'd accidentally tossed out the walk.
It's ridiculous to think any of our neighbors broke in and threw away our walk. Why would they do such a random thing? I don't like the idea of inviting them over with ulterior motives. That makes us the weirdos.
I'm only asking you to try and get to know them a little better, Haley responded. Find out if any of them are eccentric or loners, other than Edith and Harold, or if any of them has experienced weird stuff happening like I have. Someone's messing with me, and I need to know who it is.
No one's been in our house, Hales. That's why we installed the alarm system,
Jake reminded her. She arched a brow at him. You mean the one you keep forgetting to set when you leave the house? He pulled a sheepish face.
It's only happened once or twice.
Haley let it slide. It irritated her that Jake wasn't as vigilant about setting the alarm as she was, but she didn't want to start an argument. She just wanted to get to the bottom of what was going on, and the sooner the better. Lately, she seemed to be on edge all the time, even snapping at Jake, and she didn't like who she was becoming. We'll keep it simple, she assured him. We'll invite them over for dessert and drinks. Jake threw up his hands.
Do whatever you want. I can see I'm not going to be able to talk you out of this one.
Haley got to work at once making up invitations on her computer, printing them out, and hand-delivering them to the mailboxes in the cul-de-sac. Everyone texted affirmative responses over the next day or two, except for Edith and Harold. Haley gave them until Thursday evening, and then set off up the pathway to their front door to extend a personal invitation. She rang the doorbell and waited until Edith cracked the door a few inches and squinted out at her. Hi, Edith, Haley chirped. Did you get my invitation to dessert and drinks on Saturday night?
We don't go out much, Edith replied.
We're just next door, Haley said. You don't have to stay long, but it would be lovely to see you. Edith puckered her forehead and adjusted her glasses.
Indeed. Haley raised her brows. Is that a yes? You will stop by?
Edith blinked uncertainly as she pushed the door closed.
I'll talk it over with Harold.
Haley took a step back and stared at the door that had been slammed in her face.
Suit yourself, she muttered under her breath as she stomped back over to her own house.
It hardly mattered if they came or not. Somehow, she doubted they'd been responsible for throwing her walk in the trash. If Edith couldn't even bring herself to stick her head out her own front door, it was unlikely they'd been trespassing in her house. The night of the party rolled around, and Haley and Jake put the finishing touches to the array of desserts on the kitchen island. Candles flickered around the counters, and white wine and sparkling cider chilled in a hammered copper ice bucket, while several bottles of red wine decanted nearby. Haley had already indulged in a glass to calm her nerves. Just the possibility of coming face to face with her stalker was enough to ratchet up her heartbeat. The doorbell rang a couple of minutes before 7, and Haley went to the door. Jim Markham, their other next-door neighbor, stood on the doorstep with a bottle of wine tucked under his arm.
Hope I'm not too early.
Haley beamed at him and took the wine he proffered her.
Not at all. Come on in. It's great to see you.
The young couple from across the street, Becca and Anthony, arrived next, followed moments later by the soccer parents, Liz and Stan. To Haley's relief, they'd left their rambunctious kids at home with a babysitter.
Couldn't pass up the chance for an adult evening,
Stan blustered with an elaborate wink. Haley chatted for a few minutes with both couples before setting down her glass and excusing herself to make sure Edith and Harold weren't standing awkwardly on the front doorstep. After waiting by the door for a moment or two, she resigned herself to the fact that they weren't going to make an appearance and made her way back to the kitchen. Becca and Liz were deep in conversation while Jake was holding court with the men who were guffawing at some story he was telling them. Haley joined the two women and retrieved her wine glass from the counter. I was just making sure Edith and Harold weren't standing outside, she explained. I didn't get a commitment from them either way. Becca and Liz exchanged a dubious look.
You won't lure those two out of their house unless there's a fire or something, Becca said.
I told Anthony he's going to end up just like them if he doesn't quit gaming.
They're certified recluses, Liz agreed.
They have their groceries delivered. They only ever leave for the occasional doctor appointment. A taxi picks them up.
So you've never had them over to your place either? Haley asked, taking a sip of her wine. She needed to slow down. For some reason, the alcohol was going to her head more quickly than usual. And tonight, above all nights, she wanted to have her wits about her in order to get a read on her neighbors. Her first impression of Liz and Becca was that they seemed pretty tight. Maybe the two couples socialized together. Becca took a bite of an eclair and tinkled a laugh.
I've never even been able to draw Edith into the garden for a chat.
I bet she'd have plenty to chat about, Liz bantered. She's forever peeking around that curtain of hers, checking to see who's coming and going.
Haley silently digested the information. If Edith watched everything that transpired in the cul-de-sac, she might have seen someone entering her house. Haley needed to go back over there and talk to her as soon as she got a chance. Edith might turn out to be her best source to get to the bottom of what was going on. Haley picked up a platter of desserts and wandered over to the men, feeling increasingly tipsy.
Dig in. We can't let these go to waste.
Jim grinned and loaded up his plate.
I have a single man's appetite when it comes to home-baked goods.
How long have you lived here? Haley asked.
Almost 4 years,
Jim replied through a mouthful of cupcake.
I work at the steel plant as a supervisor. The night shift's harder on the married men, so I'm kind of stuck with it. Doesn't do much for your social life.
Haley flashed him a sympathetic smile. I imagine it's hard to sleep during the day.
I don't need much sleep. I get by on about 4 hours.
Haley tried to focus, her vision blurring.
What do you do the rest of the time?
Odd jobs. I used to be a handyman, and I'm into hunting, ducks and geese mainly. I don't do big game.
Haley grimaced. I'm a vegetarian, for the most part. I do like seafood, but even the thought of fishing hurts me on a primal level. Jim nodded.
I get that a lot, but I love going out into the wild, being alone and one with nature. I'm not one for crowds, and I don't kill anything unless I'm going to eat it. You might want to try duck sometime if you haven't already. It makes for good eating. I can bring you over some jerky if you like.
Well, I'm sure my husband would enjoy it, Haley said, feeling nauseated, but unable to think of a polite way to deflect the offer.
Her mind was running a mile a minute, alcohol and paranoia blending as one. Could Jim be her stalker? On all the crime shows she'd ever watched, being a loner was a red flag. If he didn't sleep much, he had plenty of time to follow her around, stalk her even. And he was a hunter, after all. He seemed friendly enough, but maybe behind the scenes he was a lonely man with a sick obsession. Unsettled, she turned her attention to the other men in the group. "So, Stan, do you coach soccer?"
"Yeah, hanging out with the kids on Saturdays keeps me young, and it makes a change from being stuffed into a suit and tie all week."
"What do you work at?" Haley asked.
"I'm a realtor. In fact, I showed this place before you bought it."
Haley stiffened, clenching the platter in her hand, only too aware that her smile had frozen on her face even as the room began to spin around her. Did Stan still have a key to her house?
Chapter 10.
Haley woke the next morning with a blistering headache. Slowly, she forced her eyes open and patted the other side of the bed. The sheets were cold to her touch. Jake must have been up for a while. Scrabbling around for her phone, she squinted at the screen, attempting to read the time. 11:37 a.m. She gasped in disbelief. How was it possible she'd slept this late? Sinking back on her pillow, she closed her eyes again, trying to remember how the party had ended. Her mind was a complete blank, devoid of any recollection of going to bed. She recalled greeting her neighbors as they arrived, all of them except for Edith and Harold Moore, who had failed to show. That much she knew. She distinctly remembered walking around the kitchen, refilling wine glasses, and offering platters of the bite-sized desserts she'd slaved over for most of yesterday. But for some reason, she couldn't remember saying goodnight to anyone, or seeing any of her neighbors to the door, or anyone thanking her for the great evening they'd had, come to think of it. After a few more minutes of willing the painful pounding in her head to end, she gingerly moved aside the duvet and swung her legs to the side of the bed. Stumbling into the bathroom, she stared critically in the mirror at her drawn face, shocked at the dark circles under her eyes. She looked like a train wreck. She desperately needed a shower, but that would have to wait. The first thing on her agenda was a mug of strong coffee to try and jolt her short-term memory into action. She grabbed some Advil and swallowed them down with a palmful of water before exiting the bathroom, feeling weak and disjointed. Hesitantly, she made her way downstairs. Jake was seated at the kitchen island scrolling through his iPad. He barely glanced up when she walked in. "Morning," she offered, with more gusto than she felt.
"Hey."
Despite the throbbing in Haley's head commanding her attention, it was impossible to miss the air of hostility emanating from him. She wet her lips, racking her brain for some memory of what had brought it about. Had they argued last night after the party? She wound her way over to the Keurig, popped in an espresso pod, and pressed the button. Caffeine in hand, she joined Jake at the island and pulled out a stool. "You seem preoccupied. Or are you deliberately ignoring me?" He threw her an irritated look.
"Do you blame me?"
Haley blinked, taken aback by his disgruntled tone. "What? You're looking at me like I did something." He set down his iPad and frowned at her.
"You really don't remember, do you?"
Haley's stomach tightened. She was reluctant to admit that she couldn't recall anything about how the evening had ended. "Remember what? I remember the party. We invited the neighbors over for drinks and desserts. Did something happen I don't know about?" She had a feeling Jake was about to tell her, and that she wasn't going to like what he had to say. He tightened his lips before answering.
"You made a complete fool of yourself in front of our neighbors. You got so drunk I had to take you upstairs and put you to bed."
Haley's mouth fell open. "Don't be ridiculous. I've never been drunk in my life. I only had a glass and a half of wine." Jake shook his head in disbelief.
"You must have been partaking more freely than that. Maybe you were trying to calm your nerves or something, but you got so tipsy you were falling over people."
Haley sat in shocked silence as she tried to digest what he was saying. Had she got drunk? She did remember the wine going to her head more quickly than usual. If she'd actually got so drunk that she was falling over people, no wonder Jake was upset. He was so straight-laced, so black and white. He would hate that she'd made a fool of herself the very first time they'd invited their neighbors over. "The thing is, Jake," she said hesitantly, "I didn't drink much at all. I never have more than a glass or two when I'm hosting. It's too hard to stay on top of things. Jake let out an exasperated sigh.
Well, that's not what happened last night. Ask any of the neighbors. I was the one stuck apologizing to everyone. You ruined the whole party. After I came back downstairs, they all made their excuses and left.
Haley stared into her coffee cup, pressing hard for any shred of a memory of Jake accompanying her upstairs. But her mind was blank. None of it made sense. Why would she all of a sudden start drinking so heavily that she passed out? It wasn't like her at all. She'd made one terrible mistake in her life, and the idea of getting drunk enough to make another was abhorrent to her. And then a frightening thought occurred to her. Her gut tightened, and when she spoke, her voice shook. I think I know what happened, Jake. One of the neighbors must have slipped something into my drink. It proves what I suspected all along. One of them is behind this attempt to sabotage me. I don't know why. Maybe they're getting some kind of sadistic kick out of it. Jake leaned back against the bar stool and pressed his fingers to his temples.
Haley, please stop. I'm begging you. Our neighbors are a bunch of decent, hard-working people like ourselves. They're not creeps. You saw that for yourself last night. And Edith and Harold are elderly recluses who never leave their house. I can guarantee everyone has better things to do than sneak into our house and throw out our pots while we're at work, and they certainly aren't going around drugging people.
Why won't you listen to me? Haley demanded. It's the only explanation for what happened. I started feeling dizzy and disoriented almost at once. I'd barely drunk a few sips. My glass was sitting beside the platters of desserts when I went to the front door to look for Edith and Harold. Anyone could have slipped something into it. Jake stood abruptly.
I've had enough. This is getting completely out of hand. Just because a couple of nasty things happened to you in the past, it doesn't mean our neighbors are drugging you.
You don't know that! You scarcely know them!
Maybe I don't know you all that well either,
Jake retorted, his eyes glinting with anger.
Because I'm beginning to think you're paranoid about everyone.
Before Haley had a chance to respond, he strode out of the kitchen, down the hall, and slammed the front door behind him. Moments later, she heard the sound of his car starting up and pulling out of the cul-de-sac. She dropped her head into her hands. Her world felt like it was crashing down around her. She'd dared to believe things would improve once she and Jake were married, and he was living in the house with her. That he would take her side and help her get to the bottom of things. But he didn't believe her. He thought she was going crazy. Haley let out a heavy sigh and laid her head down on her arms. Maybe she was losing it. Maybe there was something medically wrong with her. If she'd blacked out last night, perhaps she'd blacked out on other occasions too and didn't even know it. After a few minutes, she sat up and sipped her coffee, reflecting on the growing number of inexplicable episodes in her life. Aside from the possibility that she'd accidentally thrown the walk out herself, she definitely hadn't sent that awful email to her boss, or damaged her own car, or written a note telling herself to die. The things that were happening to her were making her paranoid. She got to her feet, walked over to the kitchen drawer, and pulled out a composition notebook. One by one, she jotted down the incidents in an approximate timeline as best she could remember. If Jake didn't believe her theory that someone was messing with her, she would have to figure things out for herself. She couldn't ask the police to find out who was stalking her. They might start digging into her past and uncover things she didn't want anyone to know about. Her thoughts drifted back to the awful things she'd done. The last thing she needed now was cops asking about the newspaper articles with Emma Murray's face plastered all over them.
Chapter 11. 11 years earlier.
Who's the new chick?
Lachlan jerked her pert chin at the petite blonde who had slipped quietly into a seat in the back row of their honors biology class. The girl sat, unmoving, shoulders hunched, eyes firmly fixed on her desk.
Only a loser changes schools halfway through sophomore year,
Tina hissed.
No idea who she is,
Vivian said, a sinister grin forming on her heavily outlined lips.
But we should make it our mission to find out.
Yeah, Lachlan drawled, fluffing out her mane of black waves.
Let's befriend the poor lost lamb. She looks like she needs our help.
They dissolved into a fit of laughter, the underlying intent all too clear. While the others were busy touching up their makeup in their iPhone cameras, Haley cast a curious glance at the newcomer. For a brief moment, the girl met her gaze, giving her a tentative smile. Haley fought the temptation to smile back, instead tossing her head as she turned back to her quad sisters. "Can you believe that freak just smiled at me? One of those lip-trembling, please be my friend because I'm so lonely, smiles." Lachlan let out a contemptuous snort. "I've got this one. Watch and learn." She got to her feet and minced to the back of the classroom, swinging her hips as several of the guys ogled her long, lean figure. The other quads watched as Lachlan bent over the new girl's desk, affording everyone in the vicinity an indulgent display of her cleavage. She exchanged a few words with the stranger before strutting back to her desk, her lips curved into a snide smile.
"Well," Tina demanded, "what's the scoop?"
"Ugh, boring beyond belief." Lachlan swatted her hand through the air. "Her name's Emma. Her dad got transferred here with the bank he works at. She's gonna be way too easy. I invited her to sit with us at lunch." And so it began. For the next few weeks, the quads hung around Emma until they'd gleaned enough information to start making her life miserable. Her homework mysteriously disappeared. Vulgar graffiti defaced her locker. Somehow gum found its way into her hair and mushed French fries into her backpack. A photoshopped picture of her with an elongated jaw and prominent ears was submitted to the yearbook. One of the guys at the quad squad's beck and call feigned interest in her and then posted the pathetic text she sent him on social media. For weeks on end, a host of increasingly malicious diversions kept the quads and their groupies amused. All the while, Emma believed her new friends were helping her through a trying semester at a new school. The day Haley got a hold of Emma's diary elevated her rank among her quad sisters for a few brief hours. But what she chose to do with it next was what ripped them apart forever. Lachlan was the first to pass her driving test, and her wealthy parents rewarded her with a brand new white Prius. Unbeknownst to them, she regularly drove her quad sisters all over town in it. The day it all went down, they'd gone to a local coffee shop after school for mochas and taken Emma along for sport. Tina had purchased a powder laxative and added it to her drink. Afterward, Lachlan offered to give them all a ride home. Emma, who lived close to the coffee shop, was already feeling queasy and insisted on walking. The others piled back into the Prius, snickering and nudging each other as Emma tripped her way down the street, clutching her stomach. That's when Haley discovered Emma had left her backpack in the car. "No way," Haley said in a breathless whisper, undoing the buckles and getting ready to rummage around inside. "This is perfect. The freak forgot her backpack."
"Score! This ought to be good." Vivian gave Tina a high five. "What you got, Hales?"
"One classwork binder." Haley tossed it to the floor and yanked out a composition notebook next. "Biology homework? We could for sure do something with that. And here's her volleyball shirt. That's definitely going missing." She fished around inside the backpack some more and pulled out a notebook with a tiny gold lock.
"Check this out. I think I just hit the jackpot."
She held the book aloft for the others to see. "It's a diary."
"What? Give it here!"
Vivian yelled from the passenger seat, trying to snatch it out of Haley's fingers and bumping the steering wheel in the process.
"Hey, knock it off!"
Lachlan cried.
"You're gonna make me crash! My parents will kill me if I get in a wreck with you lot in the car."
"Let me see that!" Tina held out her hand for the diary.
"Nuh-uh."
Haley slipped it between her thigh and the side of the car.
"I found it. I get to look inside first."
She reached for the backpack again and began searching through the smaller pockets for the key to open the lock. Tina frowned at her.
"What are you doing?"
"Looking for the key."
"You don't need one," Tina snapped back. "Give it here. I'll show you how to open it."
"I got this." Haley's fingers closed around a pair of scissors in Emma's pencil case. The diary was too big a triumph for her to relinquish to any of the other girls. She pulled out the scissors with a flourish and jammed them into the tiny padlock on the diary, forcing it open.
"And we're in," she announced triumphantly.
As she flicked through pages of doodles and entries, she began reading out loud Emma's most intimate confessions. Everything from what she hated about herself to her thoughts on saving whales and the environment. Within minutes, the girls were busting their sides, cackling sacrilegiously at each new reveal.
"She's even lamer than I thought,"
Vivian rasped, scarcely able to stop laughing long enough to get the words out.
"I can't believe the stuff she writes."
"Hey, listen to this." Haley lowered her voice to an odd whisper. Sounds like Emma's got the hots for Mr. Davidson.
Our English teacher?
Tina crumpled her forehead in disbelief. Are you serious? Oh, yeah. Haley swiftly scanned the page in front of her. She's into him in a big way. You've got to be kidding me, Lachlan exclaimed. He's at least 35. Tina tried to snatch the diary out of Haley's hands again. So what does she have to say about him?
Shut up and listen, Vivian narrowed her eyes at Tina. Read it to us, Hales.
Haley began reading in an exaggerated, breathless tone.
To my one true love, Eric Davidson. The sound of your voice washes over me each morning like a soft rain. Every time I hear you speak, it's as though you're speaking only to me. Your soft lips press against mine, the fire of your passion shooting through me like a comet.
Haley stopped reading abruptly and looked around at the other girls wide-eyed.
This is pure gold. We've got to do something with this.
You think? Tina said. We need to get Davidson's eyeballs on it for starters. Vivian arched a heavily powdered brow at Haley.
This one's on you. You found it. It's your job to make sure this drivel finds its way to Davidson's desk.
For a brief moment, Haley hesitated, considering the repercussions. But they paled in comparison to the adulation that would come her way from her quad sisters if she left the diary on Mr. Davidson's desk. Ignoring the voice in her head that cautioned against such a deep betrayal of Emma's trust, Haley grinned around at the other girls as she ripped the page from the diary in one decisive tug.
I've got a better idea. I'm going to pin it to the notice board outside Davidson's classroom and let the whole school gawk at it.
Love it, love it, love it!
Lachlan sang, her tempo rising with each pronouncement as she slapped the steering wheel.
Let's do it right now, Tina said. We need to dump Emma's backpack off at the school anyway. We'll tell her she forgot it at school. That way anyone could have taken the page from her diary.
The plan took shape as the girls drove back to school, riding on a wave of euphoria at the thought of the humiliation about to descend once the love-struck Emma's diary page was discovered and distributed. Back at the school, the corridors were close to deserted, only the occasional student or teacher passing along them. Lachlan wasted no time emptying out Emma's backpack next to the lockers and then tossing it to one side before they made their way to Mr. Davidson's classroom. Haley scanned up and down the corridor in both directions before pinning the incriminating page to the English department notice board. Above it, she placed a post-it note with the words, "Guess who Mr. Davidson's secret lover is?" When she was done, the quads headed out to the parking lot, giggling hysterically in anticipation of what the next day's big reveal would bring. Haley spent the remainder of the evening in her room exulting in her infamy. She might have been the last to join the quads, but she was no longer their most insignificant member. The fallout was instantaneous. The handwritten diary page was discovered before first period began the following day, and within minutes, kids were messaging pictures of it to each other, taking bets on who Mr. Davidson's secret lover was. Haley was on a high the entire first period, but by second period, things had taken a turn she didn't anticipate. The police arrived on campus. Mr. Davidson didn't show up for the rest of his classes, and the rumor mill was just getting started.
Did you know he's a child molester? He's been having affairs with students for years.
The police think he might be part of a sex trafficking ring.
He seduces girls and films them.
By late afternoon, the handwriting on the diary page had been identified as Emma Murray's. When she was called out of math class, the quad sisters exchanged satisfied grins. A thoroughly humiliated Emma would be forced to admit that it was all fantasy on her part, and Mr. Davidson would return to work, exonerated of any wrongdoing. It would all blow over by day's end. For the remainder of the day, Haley reigned supreme as queen of the quads. Lachlan, Tina, and Vivian even took her out for a shake after school to congratulate her on the feat she'd pulled off. Little did Haley know, that night was the last night she would sleep well for years to come. The next morning, the campus was swarming with law enforcement, and the interrogations began in earnest. The cops talked to everyone in Emma's classes, paying special attention to her friends. The quad squad was separated and interviewed. Each question churned up more fear and dread in Haley's heart.
Did Emma have any enemies? What about a boyfriend or an ex-boyfriend? Did you know she had a crush on Mr. Davidson?
Did you see Emma and Mr. Davidson together?
Did Emma ever hint that Mr. Davidson touched her inappropriately?
The relentless questioning went on for days until the police finally closed the case. There simply wasn't enough evidence to prosecute Mr. Davidson for having sex with a minor, but the very hint of scandal had been enough to force him to resign from his position. Emma Murray could do nothing to absolve him. She'd hanged herself the night her diary went public.
Chapter 12.
6 months to the day when her car was vandalized, Haley received a gift basket from the Fruit Gourmet. She knew the exact date it was delivered because she'd begun documenting everything in her notebook. Not just the harassment and the disturbing things that were happening to her, but also every occasion when she sensed someone was watching her. She made a careful note of when and where each incident happened, who she suspected, and why. If she was ever forced to go to the police, at least she'd have a detailed log of events and suspects to show them. She grimaced as she reviewed her notes. As disheartening a thought as it was, if it turned out she was losing her mind, then her notes might even prove useful to whichever psychologist she ended up seeing. She'd already succumbed to taking extra-strength sleeping pills in an effort to curb the insomnia. Maybe something to tackle her paranoia next was in order. The day the basket was delivered, she'd arrived home from work ahead of Jake. He'd been working late more often than not in the weeks since they'd hosted the disastrous neighborhood gathering. She still couldn't entirely shake her suspicion that someone had tampered with her drink that night, but Jake remained convinced that she'd simply made a fool of herself by drinking too much. Haley could feel a distance growing between them, and it broke her heart, but she wasn't sure what to do about it. It was hard to feel close to your spouse when he dismissed your fears and thought you were crazy. Not that she could blame him. Some days she wondered as much herself. She'd been going out of her way to avoid her neighbors, checking to make sure no one was in their driveway before exiting her house. To her dismay, Jake had struck up quite the friendship with the men who lived in the cul-de-sac following their party. She couldn't help wondering what he'd told them about that night. That his wife was losing it? That she was an alcoholic? Popping pills like candy? Haley pulled into her driveway after work and, after throwing a quick glance in the rearview mirror to make sure no one was around, climbed out of her car and locked it, checking it twice as she was now in the habit of doing. She walked up to her front door, observing without moving her head her neighbor Edith taking a quick peek from behind the safety of her curtain. Haley had grown used to her curious next-door neighbor's ways. In an odd way, it was comforting to know they kept a close eye on things. Ironically, it was also the only way anyone would ever know if anything happened to them. The day the curtain failed to twitch would be the day Haley called the authorities to conduct a welfare check. She stooped down to pick up a couple of parcels on her front doorstep, a small bubble wrap package from Amazon for Jake, and a large box from the Fruit Gourmet addressed to her. She frowned, racking her brain as to who it could be from. Nick, perhaps? Thanking her for a job well done on their last case? He'd gifted her a bottle of champagne as a thank you in the past, but he always left it on her desk in the office. Still, he knew where she lived. It was possible he'd had it sent directly to her home. Inside the kitchen, Haley set the parcels on the counter and tossed her keys and purse down next to them. After grabbing a bottle of water from the refrigerator, she sat down at the kitchen island to open the box from the Fruit Gourmet. Someone knew she had a penchant for fruit. She sliced open the packing tape and opened up the cardboard box to reveal a royal blue gift box with an embossed company emblem on the front. She sniffed at it tentatively. Something didn't smell all that great. Gingerly, she lifted out the gift box and pulled off the lid, immediately reeling back from the odor that assailed her nostrils. Black flecks flitted past her eyes as tiny fruit flies zipped away from the fermenting mush in the box. Stomach roiling, she hurriedly slammed the lid back on and raced out to the garbage can at the back of the house. She tossed the entire box inside, almost gagging in the process before returning to the kitchen. The odor of rotten fruit lingered in the air as she threw open the window, staring in dismay at the fruit flies flitting around inside her house. She quickly filled a couple of glass dishes with apple cider and added a drop of dish soap to each one before covering them with plastic wrap and poking holes in the top to serve as traps. Hopefully they would serve their purpose before Jake came home. He would be disgusted by the invasion. His obsession with cleanliness made him particularly adverse to insects or animals in the house. She turned her attention to the cardboard shipping box the tray of fruit had been nestled in. Poking out from the peanuts that filled it, she spotted a small, white envelope. She reached for it and tore it open, staring in horror at the single word printed on the